Session number 9253, reel 11.
Mr. Jack Dorgan, reel 11. You were telling me about the certificate you got concerning your promotion to sergeant, I think.
Yes, I have a certificate at home, which is in one of my scrapbooks, and I have 15 scrapbooks. I had 14 the last time I mentioned them, but I've bought a new one this last week. So I have 15 scrapbooks now, and in one of these scrapbooks is a certificate which says, Sergeant J. Dorgan, substantive rank, in brackets. Not many sergeants in the British Army can say that they are of substantive rank and have evidence of it. Very proud of that certificate. However, that's just by the way. Well, and
what new responsibilities did that entail, being a sergeant?
The first responsibility from that was the next day, after Sir John French had visited the brigade, a number of NCOs, and if you know what an NCO stands for, non-commissioned officer, a number of non-commissioned officers were sent away to various regiments who had been in trench warfare for some weeks or months. I was immediately, after Sir John French's visit, sent to the Irish Rifles. I went to the Irish Rifles, who had been out in Belgium for some months in trench warfare, and I spent 8 days with them. The day I arrived at their headquarters.
What battalion was it? Can you remember?
I have no idea. I remember that just one thing followed another, you know. Irish Rifles, I remember.
And where was their headquarters?
I have no idea. No idea at all. And I was there 8 days, and they were in the trenches somewhere in Flanders. So I went up into the trenches with them. And I lived with them and stayed with them 8 days with these Irish Rifles. They were a dirty, ruffianly-looking lot to me. You've got to remember that only a week before, I had been in England. I had clean underclothes, I had clean uniform, except for that one day on the 26th of April in the Second Battle of Ypres, going up to St. Julian. It was muddied, my uniform, but otherwise clean and so on. And there I was, in among these fellas who had been in and out trenches some months in warfare. And those 8 days were crowded because I was taken just as an ordinary Irish Rifle sergeant and had to do duties the same as the rest of their sergeants.
What was your first impression of the trench system when you arrived?
Well, that was the first trench that I saw.
No, the trench system that you saw with the Irish Rifles.
Oh, that's right. Well, I had very vague ideas, really. Very vague ideas, because, you see, I just had gone through 2 days before a very arduous and, well, many of my comrades were killed and wounded. And my memory doesn't serve me very much, except that I went out in no man's land, mostly in no man's land, because that was my fort. That was what I was wanting to know more about. If we were going to be on trench warfare with my own battalion, I wanted to know more about trench warfare, because remembering I'd been a scout leader, a Boy Scout leader at home before the war, and I was used with being out in camp at night in the dark, because in those days the Boy Scouts we maintained a 24-hour guard on our camp. And we did tracking, we did signalling, we did all manners of nature law and so on. So that I was anxious to see this no man's land. I knew I would be A1 when I once got there into trench warfare. So I spent most of my time with the Irish Rifles in no man's land. I didn't spend very much time in the trenches. You've got to remember, in trench warfare, everything is stationary in the hours of daylight. Nobody moves. You just remain where you happen to be. But at night, in the hours of darkness, if it's winter, of course, you have long hours. But in the summer, you haven't got so many hours of darkness. And they are very, very full, those hours of darkness, because you had to maintain, and that's what I learned with the Irish line. I didn't learn, but I got to know of them, sentry groups, maintaining a sentry group, maintaining listening posts, going out on patrol, repairing the trenches, making your trenches deeper and higher with sandbags and so on. I spent 8 days, you could say learning that, but I don't know. I spent 8 days with the Irish Rifles doing their daily job. And at the end of the 8 days, I went back to my battalion.
Were they good teachers? Did you learn a lot from them?
Oh, yes. Oh, they were a hard lot. They were a dirty lot, very dirty. And they never bothered much. The officers neither, not like our battalion. I mean, we had inspections when we were out of the trenches. I don't know if they had them because I was never out on rest with them. All the time I was with the Irish Rifles was when they were in the trenches, you see. And then when they went back for a rest after the 8 days I was with them, well, I went back to my battalion. When I went back to my battalion...
You were telling me whether they were good, how they taught you, whether they were good at teaching you. How did they teach you?
Well, I just did the same as them. No one teaching me, though. I was just accompanying. I was with them, that's all. That was their way of teaching me, as you might say. I mean, I was a sergeant, and if a sergeant had duties to do in their regiment, I was in charge of helping to repair the trench, fill sandbags, repair barbed wire, and going on patrol, just the same as an ordinary sergeant in their company.
They were competent as fighting men then?
Oh, I was very much impressed with them. They were a smaller type. I was 5'10½". No, I seem to be inches taller than everyone. They seemed smaller fellas. I don't know. I may be wrong, but they all seemed smaller than me, these Irish Rifles. But I was glad of the 8 days I spent with them, because when I went back, I had the same jobs to do, but I had some experience of it. Now then, when I went back to my battalion, along with all the other non-commissioned officers who had been out with, some of them may not have been as lucky as me, because we all just had gone out for 8 or 10 days, you see. And this luck happened, the Irish Rifles went into the trenches just as I arrived, so I knew only the trench. Some of them would go when they were coming out of the trenches and so on. I don't know. But that's what would happen, I should imagine. So that the first week that I arrived back at my battalion, we went up into the trenches, but we didn't go into first line duty trenches. We went into reserve trenches, all the battalion. You've got to remember that we had suffered great losses. We had lost 800 men out of 1,500 on that day, the 26th. 800 we lost out of 1,500 or 1,600. And so we were supposed to, take it easy for a while. In any case, we had never been in the trenches over the battalion, so the first acquaintance with trenches my battalion had was in the reserve trenches.
Where at?
Not me. I'd been in trenches with the Irish Rifles, but they hadn't.
Where did they go into reserve trenches? Do you know where?
No. Oh, no. No, you
was
didn't
it in
know.
The Ypres sector?
Oh, it was still in the Ypres sector. Ypres salient. They call it the Ypres salient. Yes, oh, I was still in the Ypres salient somewhere or other. And I went back. But when I was with the Irish Rifles, I knew I was getting uneasy when I was with them, because when I arrived back, I was soon told of it, because my clothing, myself, was full of lice, which I had picked up from these Irish Rifles. And the fellas in my battalion, out from England a week before, and still cleaned, as you might say, and here's me, a sergeant, coming and sleeping in the same and doing the same duties and in charge of them. And I had lice in all my uniform and underclothes. And they were very active, you know, the lice. You could see them, you know, lice. Oh, yes. I wrote a story later, I might mention it later, about a session with the lice. But you could see them. We called them greybacks, you know. And you could nip them, you could burn them. And you put insect powder on them. Later, we used to get, in all parcels from England, as the war progressed, we used to get insect powder sent from England in all parcels. But I killed it straight. Because our battalion, the 7th Northumberlands, although they looked at me askance, having these lice, soon they themselves had lice. Because the trenches they went into, the sandbags that they handled, the trench itself was all full of lice. Everything, all over, every trench and everything was lice. In the ground, we used to say, there was lice. An awful business.
What do you remember about these reserve lines you went into?
That was the only one I was ever in, that one. It was just like an ordinary trench, but we didn't have the enemy in front of us. In front of us, about 250 yards in front of us, was our front line. You see, so that we were just doing trench duty, but there was no activity, really. And then we went out.
Were you under fire at all?
No, never. No, no, no. You see, I don't know if the enemy knew we were in the reserve trenches. It was only about a couple of hundred yards behind our front line. And you see, it was the front line that Germans concentrated on. So that we, in the reserve trenches, we did ordinary trench duty with sentry groups and with listen posts and no man's land. The no man's land was the land between the reserve trench and our front line. We did ordinary duties like that to accustom ourselves. Now, we who had been out with these different battalions, different regiments, in active trench warfare, we had a little insight in what it meant, and we were instructing and telling them and looking, giving our fellows instruction on what to do and so on. And then we finished some 6 or 7 days in that reserve trench, went back for a rest, and then the next time up, we took an active part in the front line. You never seemed, when you went into the front line trenches, we never seemed to go, it's very, very rare, we seemed to get into the same portion of trenches. That's understandable when you think of it, because the strength of your battalion, the strength of your company, the strength of your platoon was always varying. Because every time you went into a front line trench, my records, which I've got from the War Office since the war finished, show, and reading the story of the 7th Northumberlands by some officers. We suffered casualties every time we went into the front line. As I expect, other regiments did the same. You suffered 3, 4, 5, up to 10 casualties. Not all killed, some just wounded, but you're back. And then, after a few weeks in trench warfare on our own, we started to get replacements from England. Now, my job, as a sergeant, the adjutant sent for me and he says, I'm giving you express orders, express instructions to take charge now of the whole of the battalion, no man's land. I want you to oversee all activities in no man's land for all the four companies of the 7th Northumberlands. A Company, B Company, C Company and D Company. They will arrange their own activities in no man's land, but you will oversee and say that they observe ordinary precautions and so on. And you'll make yourself acquainted with all that they do in no man's land, because that's going to be your job in future. With your knowledge of scouting before the war, and being in charge of the battalion scouts in England, I was in charge of the, I believe I mentioned being in charge, you will be in charge in no man's land. And you will have only your commanding officer in charge of you. Company officers, no. Not even the company officers. If the company, because when a battalion went into the trench, frontline trench, each company was responsible for its own portion of trench. They had their sentry groups inside of the trench, keeping the cleanliness of the trench in order. We had 6 or 8 or 10 days in, you know. And the company officer had to maintain the sandbags on the top of the trench, front line called a parapet, and the rear part of the trench is called a parador. And so there were always sandbags full of earth on top, 3 or 4 deep, to heighten the trench. But German machine guns, they had our front line, as I expect our machine gunners would have the German front line taped the same way. I always thought they did. I don't know. But I do know that the Germans had our front line, top of the trench, both parapet and parador, so that the machine guns, perhaps have a couple of machine guns coming, one coming that way and one coming that way, and they were overlapped and back and forward. But you never knew when, how far the machine gun bullets would stop. And they could hit that top of that trench just as I could hit that table, like that. They were very accurate, and would split, of course, the sandbag, so that every night in the hours of darkness, the trenches had to be repaired. And that was the part of the company prerogative. They were responsible for maintaining their own trenches, both the parapet and parador, with trenches. They were also responsible for their own sentry groups, each company. And each company had listening posts out in front of the barbed wire. They were responsible for their own barbed wire and depended on the distance between the German trenches and the British trenches, front line, which was called no man's land. It depended on the distance between the two as regards the lines of barbed wire entanglements. It was everybody's ambition, every officer's ambition in the trenches, to try and get, if there was room and the distance was fair enough, to have three lines of barbed wire entanglements. Now, I'm speaking of 1915. Now, trench warfare is a different warfare to 1917 and 18.
Were you actually attached to a company, or were you on headquarters staff of the battalion?
No, I was on headquarters. You see, I always thought of B Company, Ashenden Company, is my company, of course, because I came from them. But I was on headquarters. Now, headquarters, battalion headquarters, that is. Now, when the battalion went into the frontline trench, the battalion headquarters would be posted somewhere behind the front line. If there was a ruined house, cottage, or even a thick hedge, they would make that their headquarters. Now, on battalion headquarters, you had your colonel in charge, Colonel Scott Jackson was our colonel. Colonel Scott Jackson, at home in England, he was a doctor in the town of Alnwick in Northumberland. There would be his adjutant, Captain Archer, and there was generally a couple of majors on his staff. And the least said about these majors, from my point, the better. I don't like to discuss fellas in a bad way, so I would rather just leave them. For instance, there were big landowners in England, and the war wasn't like what they thought it was when they were training in England. You see, all the officers in our battalion, the 7th Northumberlands, were the sons of landowners, all landowners themselves. And there was a couple of lords among them. Then there was the Honourable Watson Armstrong, who later became a lord. There was the land, what they call the landed gentry. And they tried to make it as easy as possible on the brigade. They were on the brigade, on the battalion headquarters. Now, for instance, if the battalion was up in the front line trench, perhaps they would be 200 or 300 yards behind. And if there was a ruined cottage or two, they would make the headquarters there.
So when you were in the line, you would be billeted at the battalion headquarters?
That's right. Actually, I was a freelance, mostly, except when the regimental sergeant major got a hold of me. You see, in our battalion headquarters, you had the colonel, the adjutant, a couple of majors, and the regimental sergeant major. I have a story later about the regimental sergeant major. Mustn't forget it. He was a regular army sergeant major of the very old type. Red-featured, round face, bristling moustache, which he waxed every day, very badly liked, and he treated us territorial soldiers as dirt. That was his attitude. Regimental Sergeant Major Casey. Not one person had a word, good word for him. Except one person, I think, perhaps would. And that was our quartermaster. Our quartermaster, an officer in charge of all the rations and details and so on, back away from the battalion. He was somewhere back down towards the brigade headquarters, and he would draw his rations, food rations, and equipment and replacements and so on from the brigade headquarters. Well, now, he was from the regular army officer, a regular army officer. And there, too, the quartermaster, his rank would be a lieutenant or captain, I don't know. He called a quartermaster. And regimental quartermaster Casey, well, there are two exceptions in our battalion. We were a territorial army, territorial soldiers, with the exception of those two who were seconded from the British Army to look after the wants and respects of our battalion. Very badly liked, both of them. Mostly from their own course. Now, our battalion headquarters. And I was attached, of course, to battalion headquarters. Now, then, I used to report there from a grub. And if the regimental sergeant major, when we were up in the trenches, they would be back with the battalion headquarters, perhaps a couple of fields behind, or in a reserve trench somewhere. If he could shove some of his responsibilities onto me, the sergeant, unattached as he thought I was unattached, because no man's land didn't concern him. He was never once in no man's land, the regimental sergeant major, who was supposed to be from the British Army to keep us in discipline and so on. Never once in no man's land. Well, so I was unattached. If he get a hold of me, he used to give me all kinds of jobs. For instance, I'll tell you a story later of when I sent three signalers down to the brigade food depot for the rations. I have a good story of that later.
After this initial period in the line, were you in the salient for long in the trenches, in and out?
Oh, yes, it seemed to be quite a long time. Quite a long time, really, months and months. Because it was the end of April when we started trench warfare, 1915, and we didn't go down to Armentières till the latter end of the summer.